exaggerated. But after that accident story, saying a kid was killed? Saying she was sorry she hadn't been in touch, but she was at this dying boy's bedside for days? I felt terrible for her. Is that the payoff? Pity? Now I'd never know what to believe from her.
You met her at the beauty shop?
Not exactly. I met her... Sierra hesitated. I met her through friends.
I thought you didn't have any friends,
Dakota said. I didn't have many and none I was close to. I was brand new in town.
You met her at AA,
Dakota guessed. I didn't say that, she said.
I know you take your promises seriously, so I won't push you to tell me, but just in case you think she's sober, she's not. At least I know she drinks. I've never seen her drink alcohol, but she does. She kissed me, remember? I had to peel her off me. She'd definitely been drinking.
The surprise on Sierra's face said it all.
You don't have to say anything, Sierra, Dakota said.
Then he looked at Sam, who was busy chewing his fist and drooling all over his bib. He frowned slightly, then reached for the baby. Uncle Cody is coming around, Sierra said. Dakota rested the baby on his hip.
This brilliant baby gave me an idea, he said. I feel the need to install a nanny cam.
When Dakota left, Sierra was a little overwhelmed by what she'd learned. Connie went back to puttering in the kitchen while she gave Sam his bottle. This business with Neely sounds almost scary.
I think Dakota can take care of himself, Connie said.
Making up tall tales is one thing, but this woman sounds like a stalker.
It's been known to happen, he said.
Has it ever happened to you? She asked.
Not like that, no. I mean, Alyssa was kind of a pest. I had to tell her to give up way too often, but she never did anything to hurt me or my property.
He grinned at Sierra.
I'm making you a treat. Your favorite. Stuffed mushrooms.
I love stuffed mushrooms. Sam wants to hold his own bottle, she said. He's taking my job.
He's feeling independent, Connie said. That's good.
Sierra started to cry softly. I want to hold him longer.
You're crying?
Sometimes I think about the fact that he'll never know his mother, and it breaks my heart a little. I mean, I so want him to be with us, but his birth mother, gone from his life at such a young age, he won't remember her.
Sierra? Connie asked.
It's been such a troubling day, she said with a hiccup of emotion. Am I supposed to tell someone Neely is drinking? Connie frowned at his wife.
I don't know. I don't know all the AA rules. Besides, what does it have to do with anything? Do you think it's making her act the way she's apparently acting? Dakota doesn't even know for sure it was her. He just thinks.
Sierra, why are you crying? I don't know. I find it so emotional. A lot of it, you know. Neely's a nutcase, I think. And my brother? He's been alone so long, and he has a good woman in his life now. Oh, that makes me so happy.
She wiped her eyes.
But poor little Sam will never know his real mommy. That's sad, don't you think?
Honey... Are you about to get your...
She glared at him and he put his hands up as if he was being arrested.
I didn't say it. I almost said it, but I caught myself.
Do you need a nap? Maybe. She relented. Having a baby is a lot of work. He sleeps pretty well, but he still wakes up sometimes.
Why don't you take a little nap with Sam before dinner?
Connie said. Maybe we should... I've been a little off today. I might be coming down with a cold. She sniffed. Cody's gonna be all right, isn't he?
He's a big boy, Connie said. And we're gonna be all right, too. We'll get pictures from Sam's grandma so we can show him some of the family he missed knowing. but don't cry over it. That kid hit the lotto when he got us, because he's gonna have a great childhood. He'll have a good mom and dad. He could have been bounced all over the state, but we lucked out and found each other.
Oh, Connie,
she said, sniffing.
Go take a nap, he said.
She cuddled Sam against her and headed for the bedroom.
Sheesh, Connie said.
But he said it very quietly. Dakota stopped by the police department on his way to the bar and grill. With the damage to Sid's car, he and Stan were becoming much closer than he would have liked, in a professional capacity. When he walked in, Stan smiled from behind his desk.
Get the smell out? Pretty much, but I had to take it to Colorado Springs to get a good detailed job, and the ride over was grueling. My buddy from the county, the guy I ride the garbage haul with, came by after you took pictures and wrote up your report. He helped me empty that mess into the truck. It was easier to do that wearing our hazmat suits. Nastiest mess I've ever seen. Then I filled my sister in on some of the details. She already knew Neely was a nut job. She caught her in some lies, I guess. Not in vandalism, but very colorful lies. So I took a side trip to Walmart and bought myself a surveillance camera.
Stan just lifted a brow.
I guess next time something happens around your place, you'll have yourself a little movie. I hope there isn't any more bullshit. Even if you had some proof, she'd probably just get a fine. Oh, and lying ain't against the law, unless you're under oath.
Just so you know, I have guns, Dakota said. A couple of rifles and a 45. I'm going to take the rifles to my brother's house to lock up and keep the 45. Because, I don't know, when someone trashes your car while you're in the house, if I was burglarized, I'd hate there to be guns stolen, even by some girl.
It's just peculiar enough to get my attention. I'm doing a little of my own checking around. We'll talk about that another time. For now, I don't want you to get the idea that just because it's a woman you suspect giving you grief, that means it's not a real threat. And I like the idea that you're storing the rifles at Cal's for the time being. But lock your doors anyway, and pay attention. That's about all I can advise you. I'd hate for you to shoot her. I'd make a mess of paperwork.
I didn't do anything to make her think we had a relationship, Dakota said. I didn't encourage her. And I didn't do anything to purposely offend her. I was polite, just not interested.
You don't have anything to defend, Dakota. It's just one of those weird things. We might never get to the bottom of it. I'm sure you're far too busy for this kind of BS.
Stan laughed.
This is Timberlake, Dakota. We don't have that much going on. But let me be straight with you here. I don't like the thought of someone doing nasty things to one of my people. Lying about assaults, stabbing tires, fouling someone's car with garbage. And frankly don't care if it's a man or a woman. So I'm checking out this Neely character. I'll let you know what I find. You let me know what's on your camera.
Dakota smiled.
Thanks, Stan.
Sid was serving in the bar in the afternoon. The happy hour and dinner crowd would be descending on them soon, and she'd heard from Dakota that he was on his way over. She was completely unprepared to see Neely come into the bar, dressed to the nines as usual, and jump up on a bar stool, all smiles.
Hi, she said brightly. Sid, isn't it?
Sid frowned. This was a leap from her finger-snapping order for a chicken Caesar.
Have we met? Sid asked.
Well, I guess not officially, Neely said, putting out her hand.
I've heard other people in here call you Sid. I'm Neely.
I know who you are, Sid said. She took the offered hand reluctantly. What can I get you?
Let's see. I almost always have a salad, but I missed lunch. How about a BLT, fries, and... Let's see, I don't drink. I just don't like the taste. How about a tonic with a sliver of lime? Two slivers of lime.
You got it, she said, turning away. She keyed in the food order, then prepared and delivered the drink. As she was turning away, Neely spoke.
"Excuse me, but you seem a bit aloof. Was it something I said?"
"You ordered your meal," Sid said. "And I said you got it. I think we've covered everything."
"Then why are you so unhappy with me?" Neely asked.
Sid was stunned for a moment. Then she smiled. "You're reading me wrong. I have things to do before the happy hour crowd arrives. Will there be anything else?"
"I was just wondering, when do you get off work?"
Sid tilted her head. "And you're asking because..."
"Maybe we could get together sometime. Get to know each other. Maybe for coffee or dessert. Or if you have days off, I'd love to have dinner. I don't know that many people, and we're about the same age. I bet we'd find we have things in common."
"Thank you. That's very nice, but I'm very busy with my job and family, and I don't think we'd have much in common." Neely smiled chillingly.
"We have Dakota in common."
"Dakota and Sierra.
Sierra is a good friend of mine."
"Is she?" Sid asked, as if surprised. "I didn't know that." "Then you're pretty well fixed up."
"Excuse me."
Sid went to the kitchen. Rob wasn't there. She went to the small office he kept in the back, behind the kitchen. He appeared to be on the phone with a vendor. She couldn't tell if he was arguing about the price of something or complaining about the cost of a delivery, but she lingered in the doorway until he hung up.
"Problem?"
he asked. "A very unique problem," she said. "I'm sure I didn't tell you about this before, but there's this woman who's been hitting on and aggravating Dakota, and she's in the bar, waiting for her sandwich. She wants to know if we can be friends. Will you please take the bar for 10 or 15 minutes? I'll do anything you ask in return." He raised his eyebrows in curiosity.
"Now I can't miss it."
"She'll hit on you," Sid said. "Don't hook up with this one. She's pure poison."
"I'm a big boy."
"No, you're not all that big. This has fatal attraction written all over it."
"Yeah, and now I have to see her," he said.
Because it was irresistible, Sid peeked through the cook's glass to watch as Rob fastened a white apron around his narrow hips and picked up a cloth to wipe off the bar. He completely ignored Neely, but Sid knew he'd checked her out. Rob never missed a thing. And she'd loaded the bait. Rob was hot. She knew that, even though he was her brother. He was just plain hot. 6'2", strong shoulders from lifting crates of drinks, narrow hips, long legs, big hands, and a face that would cause Hugh Jackman to file charges for theft. She watched as Neely signaled and Rob went to her, cloth in hand. She said something humorous, he said something back. They laughed together for a moment. Then he fetched her sandwich and fries and took it to her. There were only 3 customers in the place, so he went through the swinging door to the kitchen. Sid was waiting.
"What did she say to you?"
"She asked where the waitress was, and I said, 'What waitress? I just have the bartender until 4 o'clock. She asked for you by name, and I said you were working in the kitchen for a little while, but you'd be back in the bar soon. Then she asked if I was married, and I said that I was, to a very jealous woman. She thought that was very funny. But she accused me of making it up."
"Because I bet she knows exactly who you are. She's creepy, and there doesn't seem to be any proof, but we're pretty sure she's been stalking Dakota. And she's tried to alternately pick up Dakota and then accuse him of assaulting her. She's making a mess for us."
"What the hell does she want?"
he asked.
"I don't know. Dakota, probably."
"Aw, Sid. What have you gotten yourself into? Are you sure he's telling the truth?"
"Yes, of course I'm sure," she insisted. "There are many inconsistencies surrounding that woman, and not once have I been confused by Dakota."
"Were you confused by David?"
he asked. "Not at all. I thought I was stuck with David. There, she'd said it. Her brother just looked at her in shock. I had a terrible marriage, all right? It wasn't like your marriage with Julian. Young lovers, so devoted to each other. Within a year, I knew I'd made a terrible mistake, but I'd made the promises. I did my best, knowing all the time he didn't love me either. But I didn't realize he was loving someone else. I thought he was loving his career, his plans. We didn't fight. We got along all right. I thought maybe what we had was typical. And besides, I had things to do. It was my fault, don't you see? Because I really didn't care. So failing in that, we can't do this now. The kitchen had gone kind of quiet. Rob looked like he was in shock.
If it was lousy, if you didn't love him and he didn't love you, why
would I have a nervous breakdown over it? Because he used me. Because he made a mockery of work that was important. Because I was hanging in there for him, and when he was done with me, he threw me away. Sid's phone chimed, and thinking it might be a text from Dakota, she pulled it out of her pocket and looked at the screen. What's super timing? She said sourly. Dr. Faraday, my old boss. Please find time to call me, he says. I really need your help, he says.
I'll take care of the bar if you want to go call him.
Not now. He probably has some code problem, and I'll need my computer and some quiet. Besides, I should deal with Psycho Neely. I'm telling you, she's a little crazy, and she's making trouble everywhere. I have no idea what her goal is. If we knew her endgame, we'd know what to solve, wouldn't we?
I'll take the bar, he said.
No, I've got it. She went through the swinging door just as Dakota was walking into the bar. Sid watched as he stopped short, recognizing the back of Neely's head. He frowned, and she thought, see? He's not hiding anything. He hates her and might even be a little frightened of her. He walked all the way around the bar to the far corner, as far away from Neely as he could get. Sid slapped a napkin down in front of him. What can I get you?
I'd better have a cup of coffee. Looks like I'll have to be alert.
Sure, let me get that for you. She turned around to pour from the pot, and when she turned back toward him with the coffee, all of a few short steps, Neely had moved to the chair beside Dakota's, and he was wearing a black scowl.
Now see, I think we all need a do-over, Neely said brightly, seeming to include Sid in her conversation. I don't know what happened, but...
What happened is that you told the police chief I assaulted you, Dakota said, his voice gravelly and dark.
Is that what he said?
That's not exactly accurate. It was wrong of me to say anything at all that could be misinterpreted like that, but I didn't say you assaulted me. I just said you kissed me. I admit that wasn't the truth. I shouldn't have done that, but I was just embarrassed. And I did apologize to you.
And the boyfriend who was stalking you? Dakota asked.
Apparently my imagination. I haven't seen him around. So, she said, grinning. We can all be friends now.
We can be polite, Dakota said. I think friendship between us is not in the cards.
Well, that's pretty rude, she said indignantly. I humble myself in front of you, take blame I shouldn't really have to take, and that's your response?
I'm not going to be manipulated, Neely. That's my response. I'd like to order an early dinner, if you'll excuse me.
Neely sat there for a moment, shock etched on her beautiful face. Then she turned in a huff and walked out of the bar. Sid put the coffee down in front of Dakota. And that's at least the second dinner she hasn't paid for. Maybe third. That's quite a racket. Get your feelings hurt and storm out without paying.
Glad I parked under the light out front, he said. Your car, where is it?
She chewed her lip. I left it at Rob's and walked to work. The boys are home. The sun will be up for another hour. All the neighbors are out on their porches and in their gardens. Surely everything will be all right.
Her confidence is chilling, he said. She's got a story for everything, and then a story for every story. What the hell does she really want?
You, I think.
Nah, that's too simple. With her looks and apparent money, she could find a guy who has a lot more to show for his life than I do.
Oh, Dakota, she said with a head shake and a smile, wondering when was the last time he looked in the mirror. I'm not gonna flatter you.
Good. Then could I have a club sandwich with chips and a cold beer?
Yes, you can. And I told Rob a little about her. I told him it appeared she was stalking you, but there didn't seem to be proof.
Any chance he's going home to have dinner with his boys?
I could ask, she said.
You might want to tell him that I just pissed her off and to check on your car.
As July passed, Tom and Lola planned a family gathering. Lola's sons and parents and her sister's family, Tom, his kids, his parents, brother and brother's family. It was a very large group, and there was a purpose. So they put out two grills, and Lola made extra large salads and a big pot of beans and got the families together and made their announcement. They plan to combine their households in the fall. Why the fall? Tom's mother asked.
Once all the kids are in school and we have a good fix on where everyone is headed for the year, we're going to reconfigure bedrooms. Jackson is going to be living in an apartment in Denver. Cole is taking a dorm room at the university. Nikki's saving for a dorm suite with her girlfriends. Trace is starting at the community college, and Brenda is entering her senior year of high school.
We think we can combine households here without crowding too much, Tom said.
Except it won't be our house,
Trace muttered under his breath. Tom seemed to be the only one who heard him, but Tom was an expert and well-practiced in hearing the mutterings of kids even in a noisy house. He heard Trace say he didn't want to live in a big house with a ton of people, and at some point maybe he'd go live with his dad. Other than that, there seemed to be a real air of celebration. The families had known each other for years. They hadn't been close exactly, but when you grow up in a small town, you tend to know at least a little bit about a lot of people. Tom's parents and brother were delighted that at long last he was settling down with a woman he could actually share his life with. Lola's parents were thrilled that after so many years of raising her sons on her own, working two jobs and managing her home, she would have a partner she could hopefully grow old with. Tom's family liked and admired Lola. Lola's family liked and admired Tom. Everyone seemed to have a wonderful time. There was a great deal of laughter, and a few stories were told about Tom and Lola growing up. When the guests had all departed, when the kids finished their chores and Cole and Trace had gone back home to Lola's house, Lola and Tom finished the dishes that were left.
We have a small problem, I think, Tom said.
Trace, she replied.
So you know?
Tom asked. There's been a little grumbling. I can't really explain it, because I know he likes you. He doesn't disapprove of us.
Then let me handle this. Just let me try, and if I run into trouble, I'll back off.
What are you gonna do?
I'm not sure. I think he has some anxiety about a lot of things. Starting college, his brother leaving home, you giving up your house, which has always been his home base. Not just his home, but his security. He might be asking himself what will happen if you give up your house, move in here, and it doesn't work out. Then what?
I told him we've talked about that, but I'm not going to be without a home. That I'll never be without a home. That we hope to buy and sell more homes, maybe keep my house as a rental. That when we combine households, we combine everything, and you would never leave me broke and homeless. And he asked me how I knew that, and I said that I knew you. And sadly, I didn't really know his father that well. I thought Trace was adjusting to the idea.
Well, the kids come first, Tom said. Let me talk with Trace. Maybe I can put his mind at ease.
I'm sorry, Tom, she said. He put his arms around her, and she rested her head on his shoulder.
Shh. You don't have anything to be sorry about. Six kids, Lola,
he laughed.
If you think they'll stop throwing us a curve now and then after we get married, you're naive.
He kissed her cheek.
I'm surprised it wasn't Brenda.
Why Brenda?
Oh, she's the most like her mother, and a little spoiled. Fortunately for us, Brenda's dying to share space with Nikki. Nikki has great clothes. And Trace is a handsome kid. Great selling point.
Oh, God. What if...
Don't borrow trouble. I just had a shudder run through me, she said, leaning against him again. They're 14 to 21. We're gonna shudder a lot for about 10 more years. Then we get to start shuddering over the grandkids.
Make yourself necessary to somebody. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Chapter 15. For a week or two, Neely seemed to have disappeared. She didn't come in the bar, didn't bother either Sid or Dakota, wasn't seen around town. Dakota wondered if all that had been required was for him to be very stern, very unapproachable. He did check around his cabin for signs of footprints, tire tracks, or other disturbances, and he looked through his surveillance video. He looked quickly, but he looked.
She doesn't live in Timberlake, he said to Sid. Maybe she's wandered off to greener pastures.
Didn't she say she was invested in businesses around here? Sid asked.
Yeah, she said that, he answered, smiling. So what? She said a lot of things.
I'm gonna look up business licenses in Timberlake, Sid said.
Would that necessarily show you investment partners?
I'm very good, she said. If there's a record, I can find it.
Let's not obsess about this. I just want her to go away without leaving a trail of destruction.
And I want to be ready if she happens to come back. She hasn't bothered your sister, has she?
I've only seen Sierra twice since the 4th. She was fighting off some stomach thing and said not to come near her in case she was contagious. But she's fine now. You ask me, I think she's exhausted. Sam's awesome, but he's a handful. He's crawling and waking up very early in the morning and not wanting to go to bed at night.
We all need to get together, she said. Maybe on the weekend?
Sure. But I have to tell you, I really like being in a routine with you. We can both work, see each other regularly. There haven't been any surprises.
It's only been a little while.
But it's been good, he said. What would you say if I told you I don't need much more than this to be completely happy for the rest of my life?
I'd say I'm not ready to talk like that, she said.
All right. But can I talk like that?
You said you weren't ready to put down roots.
I'm pretty surprised by how much I enjoy being around Cal and Maggie and Elizabeth, as well as Sierra's sudden family. I kind of feel like this place is peaceful enough to calm the inner beast. I could live and work here. I'd like to see this place in winter. Do you ski?
Me? She laughed. You saw the leg, Dakota. I miss that stage.
I could teach you. I bet Rob and the boys ski.
You want to haul trash for the rest of your life? She asked. Because I don't want to be a bartender forever.
What do you want to be?
He asked. I have a few other skills. In fact, my old boss called me. I've been trying to help him with a programming issue long distance, but I think I should go back to my old lab, work with him for a few days. It would be good in a number of ways. It would tell me some things about myself, like how over it am I? Do I really want to move on to something new? Am I fully healed from my bad experience and my awful divorce?
Tell me the truth, Sid. Do you need to find out if you should run away from me?
Oh, Cody, no, she said. You're the best guy I've ever had in my life. Not that there were many. I'm so crazy about you. It's just that... Well, there's just this one thing. I don't want you to rescue me. She put her palms on his cheeks. I want to rescue myself. He was quiet for a moment.
I'm not sure I get it.
I know, she said. I can't really be with you until I'm sure of who I am. And who I am is more complicated than you realize.
Try me,
he said.
I come from a wacko family. My sister is in the hospital on drugs to calm her frazzled head. I've been in military jail. You have no idea how much I can understand.
Kind of a dramatic resume, now that you mention it, she said.
Sid, this has nothing to do with you and me.
All right, take it easy, she said, smiling. I think it's a good idea for me to go back to California and work with Dr. Faraday for a few days. Maybe a week. I should take a look at my old job, my past friends. I've talked with Rob. He's trying to work it out with the other night manager. It won't be for long, and I will talk to you every day.
When are you leaving?
In a week or two, when Rob has the schedule worked out. This is a good time. The kids aren't in school, and they're helping out in the kitchen almost every day.
The best piece of news in this is that I don't think Rob can manage without you,
Dakota said.
That's good for me.
It took a while for Tom and Lola to work out a time when Tom might catch Trace alone. July was already in its fourth week, and it was hot, even in the higher elevations. It was steamy, but the forest was brittle. Tom sat outside on Lola's porch. Trace was due home from his job at Rob's bar and had told his mother he was going to get together with a few friends that night to play baseball. It was his typical routine. If Trace worked days, he played ball at night. And if he worked nights, he played ball during the day. Whatever the schedule, he played ball. It made Tom smile. Trace came up the walk, shirt tails hanging out and shoes unlaced. He generally grazed from the fridge, drink some water, make a quick change, grab his glove and bat and head for the park. Tom stood.
You looking for my mom? Trace asked. No, she's working at Home Depot tonight. I was waiting for you. I was hoping we could talk for a few minutes. Why? Trace asked.
I got the idea we have one or two things to work out, Tom said. Come on. Give a guy a break. Sit down here.
He lifted one of two bottled waters on the small outdoor table that separated two chairs.
Here, you look a little dry. Take a load off.
Trace, reluctantly it seemed, sat down. Tom reclaimed his seat.
Let me start out by saying, I love your mom a lot, but we're not gonna rush you. I can tell you're pretty worried about us combining households. You're probably wondering where you fit in if we turn into one big family. We don't have to do that right away. We have lots of time. We want you to be ready.
You said fall, Trace said, when school starts.
That's not carved in stone, Trace. If you're not ready, we can wait.
But you want to live together.
Oh, yeah, Tom said with a self-conscious laugh. It's amazing to love a woman like your mom and have her love me back. I never thought I could be this happy.
And everyone else is okay with this idea of all of us living in one house?
Some more than others, Tom said. Nikki wants to move to a dorm in Denver at the big campus, and she's definitely not excited about sharing a room with her younger sister. Zach, on the other hand, is aching to get closer to Jackson's stuff. But Jackson is looking for a footlocker with a lock on it. I don't think Jackson or Cole care what we do. They're not planning on living with their parents much longer anyway. But they still need a place to stay when they're not at school.
Trace was quiet for a long moment.
I've lived in this house almost my whole life. Since I was 5, anyway. I don't remember the house we lived in before.
You boys and your mom have been here a long time.
Is that what bothers you?
not having this house as an anchor? Tom asked.
Sort of, he said with a shrug.
Or maybe it's that we'll live in your house.
Ah, that makes sense.
Can you think of it as your mom's house?
Listen, man, I like you. You're a good guy, and I know you like my mom. I don't have any problems with that. It's just that this is where we live, where we've always lived, and I don't want to move. That's all. It's not personal.
Gotcha, Tom said.
You planning to live with your mother the rest of your life?
He asked.
No, Trace said.
Until I get my own place, that's all.
When you're like 26?
Tom asked.
I just turned 18. Hopefully I'll be living in my own place by the time I'm 21.
So if we could wait 3 more years to get married and move in together.
But then I figure me and Cole will come here for holidays and stuff, Trace said.
Oh, I get it. So you want this house and your mother to stay the same until you decide you're done.
With it and with her?
That's not what I mean.
Can you be a little more clear about what you mean? Tom asked.
Because Lola and I decided from the start, our kids come first. We don't want to rock your world too much. So if you're going to get sideways about us getting married and living in the same house, we'll just wait until the idea is more acceptable. But it would help to know what it is you need, so we can try to make it happen.
I should be talking about this with my mom, Trace said.
Then why haven't you done that?
Because I think your mom is worried. She's ready for a positive change. Both of us are. I got divorced a long time ago, too. We're both ready to have a steady shoulder to lean on. Someone to talk about the checkbook with. Someone to divvy up chores with. Oh, and your mom has been dying to buy a fixer-upper, remodel and sell at a profit. Use all the skills she's learned working at Home Depot. And I've done that twice. We thought, if we plan right, we can turn our partnership into a business, too. We'd love to do that. We're a lot alike. We both have worked as many jobs as it takes to keep our families afloat, and we'll continue to do that.
So what's the big deal, then? Trace asked.
Tom took a drink of his water. Well, the big deal is, it's hard to love someone and not get to see them. When you live in separate houses and you work a bunch of jobs, just finding the time to talk is a challenge. Naturally, we'd like to lie down together at night, wake up together in the morning. We'd like to be able to share our days while we do the dishes or spend a couple of hours in front of the TV just not talking. That's all. We don't want to inconvenience anyone. We just want to spend time together. Quality time. But he stood up. We took an oath. Our kids come first. We'll be patient.
Would you do us a favor, though?
What?
Would you talk with your mom about this? Tell her your honest feelings? She really needs to know how you feel.
Why don't you just tell her?
Trace asked.
Tom shrugged.
I might not see her for a couple of days. She's working, and I'm working, and we have 2 houses and 6 kids to take care of.
I'll try to remember to, but she'd probably appreciate it more if it came straight from you.
Okay, he said weakly.
Sure.
Thanks for being honest with me, Trace,
Tom said.
See you later.
Yeah, Trace said.
Tom started down the walk, and then he turned. There is one more thing. I'd consider it a privilege if you could accept me as your stepfather. We couldn't do this if we didn't care about each other's kids. Your mom is really looking forward to having daughters. It would make me proud to add you and Cole to my family. Just so you know.
Trace didn't say anything. Tom didn't really expect him to.
Do I thank Sid for this born-again Dakota Jones?
Cal asked.
Born again? You've gone from the AWOL Dakota Jones to Dakota the Family Man.
No, it's not Sid's doing, he said with a laugh.
It could be, if she'd give in a little.
They were in Dakota's Jeep, headed for Denver. It was Monday, Dakota's usual day off. Maggie wasn't due back in Denver until Wednesday, so she stayed home with Elizabeth. They were going to Sully's, where Maggie would help in the garden and Elizabeth would probably eat dirt. Sedona had been released from the hospital and was staying at Maggie's for a couple of days. Bob had come to Denver to check her out and fly home with her, but her brothers asked if she could stay long enough for them to see her.
"Sid is definitely one of the things holding me to Colorado," Dakota said. "It hasn't been very long for us, but I like it. Don't get too excited. She's going to string me along for a while." "And why is that?" "I guess she wouldn't mind me telling you. She went through an ugly divorce and is coming up a little short in the trust department. She's not inclined to bet on a man."
"Especially one she hasn't known very long?" Cal asked.
"I'm starting to think the longer we're together and the better she gets to know me, the more it terrifies her. She's going back to L.A. sometime soon to give her old boss a hand. But I think it's more than that. As far as I know, she hasn't been back since Rob brought her out here. I bet she wants to know if there's anything about that old life she misses."
"Any worries that she'll move back?"
"I have no idea."
"And if she does?"
Dakota sighed and concentrated on the road.
"I'm not likely to give up easily."
"You seem altogether different than the man I thought I knew," Cal said.
"Oh, really?" Dakota thought. "I ran away from home, spent a lifetime in the army, went to war a bunch, lost the love of my life to a terrorist, went to jail for a while. Why would I change?"
"There are things you don't know about me," Dakota said. "I've been too private. There was a woman who changed my life."
He told Cal about Hesna. They talked all the way to Denver. Cal looked at Dakota's profile.
"You can start over and enjoy a happy life. Look at how things have turned out for me. I lost Lynn, but then I found Maggie. I guess you thought that only happened to you, huh? If you tell me it happens to everyone, I'm going to be very disappointed. I think I'm special."
Cal laughed.
"I hope Sid takes pity on you, because I like having you around."
"Never thought it would happen," Cal said.
Sedona greeted them at the door. Though it was July, she wore slacks, a sweater set, and fashionable leather flats. From the time she discovered life after the farm, she opted for country club casual clothing, never jeans. While Sierra still wore jeans with tears in all the right places, Sedona always looked like a schoolteacher. Cal and Dakota took their turns hugging her. She touched her hair and said, "I haven't had a proper hair color in quite a while, and I'm getting gray."
"You look great," Dakota said. "Let's get some coffee or something. Then you can tell us how you're feeling."
Bob came from the kitchen to shake hands with the men. He thanked them again for all their help, especially in finding Sedona.
"Sierra couldn't come with us," Dakota said.
"She called. She said the demands of the new addition to their household has her running low on energy. I'll catch up with her when we're both doing better," Sedona said.
They all sat at the kitchen table with coffee and some bakery coffee cake that no one touched. Dakota tried not to look too hard at Sedona, but his dark, heavy brows betrayed his emotions. She seemed fine, but every action and movement was as if she'd just awakened from a nap.
"It's going to take a little time for Sedona to get used to the medication. It may even have to be adjusted. But as Sedona tells it, she doesn't feel any inner turmoil," Bob said.
"What do you feel?"
Cal asked.
"I feel a little too calm. I guess that's the medication. The one thing I fear the most," she said, "is that everyone thinks I'm crazy."
"Anxiety isn't crazy," Cal said. "As Maggie explains it, it's a chemistry thing. Some people's serotonin levels are wacky, and that can cause depression or anxiety or any number of things. So there are medications to manage that."
I don't have much anxiety, but I now have depression, she said.
There's a process,
Bob said.
Sedona is going to come home, see a psychiatrist for her medication, and a therapist for her counseling. It's not going to be a quick cure. She has spent way too long fighting her fears. She needs a rest.
You look a lot better than you did the last time I saw you, Dakota said. But different.
I don't know what's different.
This is how you look when you realize you aren't losing your mind. And I haven't had a panic attack in quite a while. They're terrible.
I'm sure they're terrible to have,
Bob said.
They're also terrible to see. More than once I found her curled up in a corner, sweating, crying, talking to herself.
I went to a doctor several years ago, and after telling him about Jed and answering some questions, he said I was obviously schizophrenic. He put me on a heavy medication, and I got worse. I could hardly get out of bed, and then I was hallucinating.
That set us back about 5 years,
Bob said,
and everyone jokes about OCD, but the real thing is no joking matter. Half the time, Sedona couldn't sleep because of anxiety, and the rest of the time it was because canned goods that weren't alphabetized were dancing in her head.
Everything had to be my routine or I couldn't function. I've never been good with change. They talked for a while about her plans. Sedona and Bob were going to fly home the next day. The talk of separation was off the table for the time being, but Sedona said she understood that if she stopped taking her meds or attending therapy sessions, Bob wasn't making any promises.
But we're going to communicate better, Sedona said. I can't risk staying with a bad practitioner just to keep the peace when the outcome could be worse.
After an hour or so, Bob left to get some sandwiches. Cal, I owe you for putting your foot down and confronting me. At the time, I hated you, but I'm glad you called Bob. And Dakota, I still can't believe you left your job and devoted yourself to searching for me. I don't know what might have become of me if you hadn't done that.
You must have been so scared, Dakota said. I couldn't sleep at night, thinking of you living in a box under a bridge.
She laughed. With all my scraps alphabetized, it's more likely you'd have found me hiding in some store or warehouse, curled up in a sweaty ball after I'd organized everything.
It's good you're doing better, Dakota said.
We'll see how much better I am when I've been home a while. I'm afraid I've hurt my family.
Listen, you did your best. You had issues, but you tried. Sometimes you have to accept nobody's perfect, Dakota said.
Even me? She asked with a sly smile.
Sedona, the problem isn't that perfectionists are hard on themselves, Cal said. They're hard on the people around them. When I talked to Bob, he said he'd be happy to hang all the towels with a level and alphabetize the canned goods, but whatever was happening to you was much more serious than that. He was terrified. He loves you.
I know, she said softly. I hope he can forgive me. Dakota was quiet a moment.
For better or worse, he finally said. Most couples have plenty of both.
Connie took some personal time from his shift to go home. With any luck, Sam would be napping and he could have a serious talk with Sierra. But he found them on the floor together, playing.
Aww, you hope to hit nap time, she said with a sly smile.
I did, but not for Boom Boom. I want to talk to you.
Is something wrong? She asked, pulling Sam closer into the little hollow made when she sat cross-legged.
Yes, Sierra, something is wrong. You've been a little off for about a month. You might be anemic, or maybe you have some infection or something that just isn't taking hold. Or maybe it's something scary, like fatigue syndrome. I don't have a clue. I started looking on the internet. There are about 100 possibilities. But we're done screwing around with this. I made you an appointment with Dr. Culver. She's at the urgent care clinic down the road from the firehouse. She's new around here and really nice. You'll like her. She's going to draw some blood, get you some lab work, see if she can figure out what's going on.
Hell, you could have some heart infection or kidney disease making you weak and tired.
Oh, she said. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were so worried.
I'm not exactly frantic, but I suggested a checkup about 50 times and you didn't do anything. So I made you an appointment. Tomorrow, when I'm off, I'll take care of Sam.
Okay, I guess that's completely reasonable. But I bet there's nothing wrong. Just, you know, the occasional bug I don't quite get over before it hits me again.
Right. That was one of the things the internet didn't turn up. That kind of occasional uncertain bug. So you'll see the doctor tomorrow morning at 10. But first, he said, reaching into his back pocket and pulling out a long, slim box. This.
She took the box from him. A pregnancy test? But I haven't even been late.
It's the first thing the doctor is going to check.
I'm on the pill. I've been completely regular.
Just go pee on it and remove the question from my mind, he said.
But we've decided to adopt and foster on account of...
That's fine, if it works out that way. For right now, you act like a woman with a little touch of pregnancy. So pee.
But Connie, I've had all my periods right on time. Everything is...
I want you to do this, he said. Do not make me squeeze you over that stick.
Jeez, she said. Don't get all testy, okay?
He reached for Sam. Now, he emphasized.
Fine, but you're gonna feel silly.
I'm very good at that, he said. With a surly huff, she got off the floor and disappeared with the pregnancy stick. Connie held Sam on his lap. Here's the deal, bud. When you sign on with us, that means I'm your dad. That means you'll have to count on me as the one who teaches you about women. How to understand them, how to talk with them, how to negotiate with them, how to make things work with them. And as you can see, I'm a little dense about that. Your mom is teaching me the rules. I'm slow to catch on, but I'm getting there. By the time you really need to know, I'll be a damn genius.
Sam gurgled and flashed his big, toothless grin.
A blood-curdling scream came from the bathroom, causing Sam to jump. His eyes as big as hubcaps. His lower lip quivered. Molly jolted in her sleep and sat up. One ear flopped inside out.
That could be a bad sign or a good sign, depending on your perspective. Let's go see.
Sierra was sitting on the closed toilet lid, her arms crossed over her knees, the test stick dangling from one hand. Her head was down, and she was crying. She lifted her head when she heard Connie open the door.
Oh, Connie, what will we do?
I'd like to start by talking about it, he said.
How did this happen?
She asked. He shook his head. It's not like we screwed up, Sierra. You were on the pill.
Maybe I got befuddled with all that was going on. I missed a couple, so I took them when I remembered and not at the same time every day. But I thought we were good.
It's okay. This is a good thing.
Sam is only 6 months old yet, and here I am.
We're gonna be busy, he said.
We're going to do this? She asked. Are you saying we should do this?
Come here, Sierra. He said, come on, honey.
She went to him, and he enfolded her with Sam into those big fireman's arms, kissing her cheeks and eyes. He drew her backward until he was sitting on the edge of the bed. Sierra on his lap and Sam on hers.
I'm saying we should do this. I'm saying it's ours. It came out of us, came out of our lovemaking, came out of our love for each other. It wasn't planned. It's going to be inconvenient. But we can manage. Lucky for us, we can manage.
But you agreed. The risk of schizophrenia.
I agreed that if you found having children a little too frightening given your father's disease, I can live with that. But see this little guy right here? Our little guy? He came out of a smashed car. There are a lot of risks, honey. Parents have to be brave, strong, and smart.
I think we're up to it.
Oh, Connie, I'll worry all the time. Not only is there mental illness in the family, but addiction.
I think the last statistics I read, addiction touches every family. Thank goodness you're an expert on it. So don't be afraid. We're going to raise Sam, and he's going to have a little brother or sister.
I told you, she said.